Now, the only place he's struggled tonight has been the free throw line, 4 out of 8. And a conversation between LeBron and Joakim Noah right now. And LeBron now walking a little bit closer to Noah, who's still talking to him, and somebody's got to stop this.
Hello and welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hey, John.
Hey, Alan.
I'm back after a week hiatus. Yay.
We're happy to have you. What were you doing with all your free time?
I wouldn't call it free time, but... No, this work schedule's just throwing me off. Work and swing shift. It's just really just like nothing is working out the way I'd like it to right now because I'm working a shift that I haven't for a few years. So, yeah. Sorry, everyone. But, yes, I'm back. And Devin and John, I did listen to the show last week, and you guys did fantastic as usual. So,
we were thinking about making it a permanent thing.
No.
We'll talk about it. Let's jump right into it, guys.
We've got details. Yeah, we've got a good topic list of topics this week. We want to start off with the NBA, some NBA notes, right? We want to jump off with the playoff talk.
Cavaliers are undefeated. Sorry, I
might be getting ahead of myself. Or did you want to jump into the Jazz talk? Which one do you want to go with?
Let's do playoffs first.
Okay.
Cleveland is still undefeated. Toronto, looking at the numbers, are lucky to be there. I think Cleveland's going to be sitting in the finals undefeated, just waiting for their opponent to show up.
I haven't watched it because I've been working swing shift, so I've missed most of it. But I have watched enough of the box score to know that Cleveland has just flat out dominated Toronto in both those games. They were never really that close.
Yeah, I watched the first quarter of game one, and it was closed for the first 5 minutes, and then Cleveland blew it open, and that was that. And I watched about 20 minutes of game two, and it was the same kind of story where it was just obvious the whole time Cleveland was going to win. And, you know, good for Toronto for making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, but, I mean... Toronto has a really good home crowd. Maybe they'll get a win at home, but I think at the most this will be a 5-game series, and I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland just sweeps them.
Well, I know you didn't include this in the topic show notes, but I want to discuss this for just a moment about Cleveland. So the other day, I don't know if you read the Ken Berger, I think it was Ken Berger that wrote it, piece on CBS Sportsline about Tyronn Lue and the Cavs. Did you get a chance to read that?
I haven't.
Okay, so he talked about what Tyronn Lue has done for the team. He mentioned that it took a lot longer to play out than I think people wanted it to, and it wasn't a subtle change. It was just over the course of the season. But he goes, he mentioned how some sources close to the team had mentioned to him that early on in the season when Tyronn Lue took over, some of the timeouts were very interesting because LeBron would be a little dominant and Tyronn would step in and say, all right, shut up, back off. I'm the coach. Let me take care of this. And it was just subtle moments or little moments like that over the course of the season. And then Tyronn Lue putting each player in their normal position to succeed. You know, he puts Kevin Love in a position to succeed, whereas Blatt wasn't using him right before. Now Kevin Love can post up and they're running a lot of posts through him as well as he can stretch the floor. Now you've got Kyrie Irving freestyling, and it's working. The fact is, Tyronn Lue and the Cavs are dangerously good right now because all of the pieces have finally come together, including the coach, and they've come together at the right time. You can put narratives aside, Eastern Conference, whatever it is, all aside. The Cavs are real, and they're on fire right now, and it's going to be a good setup for an NBA Finals. It really is.
Yeah, I feel good about this NBA Finals. I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk for the Warriors, even though they're a historically good team this year. I think Cleveland has a very legitimate shot at winning the title this year. and I wouldn't have said that just a couple weeks ago. But, and you know, watching the way they've been in the playoffs, I think it's going to be very, very competitive.
And I'm cautious about bringing this up, but our NBA prediction show, we all three did choose the Cavs to win it all, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
So, I mean, if it happens, hey, we were prophetic. If not, you know what? The Warriors are just the Warriors. But I don't know if we're done with the Cavs, but let's carry over to the Warriors series, because I don't think the Warriors are a shoe-in for the finals yet either.
No, that first home game loss, not only was it a home game loss, but, I mean, there at the end, Oklahoma City tried to give the game away. Because, I mean, Durant lost six shots in a row there toward the end, and then finally made it one when it counted to secure the win. But, you know, game one, it looked like Oklahoma City figured something out. And then game two, it looked like Golden State figured something out. But now they're going back to Oklahoma City. And this is going to be more competitive than I thought. I mean, I figured Thunder would win one or two games at home, but I did not think they'd get one of those first two games. So, you know, Warriors are finally facing a challenge, and, you know, Thunder, KD and Westbrook together healthy, you know, it's really hard to write those guys off.
Can we talk just for a moment? And I know this pains a few of us to talk about it because of a certain player on the Thunder, but can we just talk for a moment about what the Thunder have done? I mean, game two aside, the Thunder won 3 out of 4 on the road in the playoffs, and they did it by dominating on the defensive end. Did anybody see this coming? I mean, for the Thunder to be this good defensively, did anybody see this coming?
They're good defensively at the right times. Donovan has done a good job figuring out how long to put in certain matchups. You know, they really like putting Kanter out there for his scoring and offensive rebounding, but there's a limit to it because, you know, game two, as soon as Kanter entered the game, the Warriors ran everything at him because they know they can expose him on defense. But as long as whenever he's in there with, how do I want to say this? The other big man in there with him is always either Ibaka or Adams. And both of those guys are very good defensive players. And so they can usually help hide Kanter's weaknesses.
And then on the offensive offensive end, Kanter has become a very good go-to player in the pick and roll with Westbrook, which has just opened the floor for Westbrook a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, Kanter was mentored by Al Jefferson, and you can see a lot of that. He's really good at low post scoring, really good at offensive rebounding, really bad on defense, but that's okay. And so, you know, he is this tool where you know his strengths, you know his weaknesses, and they kind of got to work around that.
You called him a tool. Okay.
Did I do that? And Thunder, I mean, really, if Durant wants to stay, there's plenty of good reasons to stay because you just know that there are going to be plenty of shooting guards who would love to take the Roberson role because he has not been good in the playoffs. And Kyle Singler's kind of been a disappointment. It's an obvious position where they need to upgrade, but they are solid in so many ways. You know, they don't feel like they're a big piece away from winning a title now. I mean, they could win it this year. There is a very realistic chance they could win it this year. It's not a majority chance. I mean, I still think the Warriors are going to win the series. But if the Thunder somehow figured out how to get past the Warriors, you know, that's not a slam dunk for Cleveland to win the finals either. I mean, Durant and Westbrook are two of the top 5 or 6 players in the NBA. I would say 2 of the top 5. In fact, MVP, didn't they both finish in the top 5?
Yes.
Was it one? I think one was 4th and one was 5th.
Yeah, I believe you're right. Yes.
I mean, that's what you need to win a title in the NBA. If you have one or two of the best players in the NBA, you'll win.
Well, I don't know. You're right. The series is far from over. But watching the Thunder, there's been, Back to Westbrook and Durant. I mean, if they continue to play, and really Westbrook didn't have a very good game too. I mean, he had 11 assists, I think, but he shot horribly from the floor. I mean, he did not shoot the ball well in game two. But if you have one of those nights where both of them continue to play consistently well, I think the Thunder can beat the Warriors if you get guys like Deion Waiters and Steven Adams coming in and just doing the right things that they do, and they doing them well, like they did in game one. You saw Steven Adams do things in game one, hustle plays. He got all of the plays that don't count on the stat sheet. You continue to get that from him, and you get that on a night combined with Westbrook and Durant going crazy. You know, the Thunder are going to, you could win the series with that alone.
Yeah, Westbrook was 5 of 14 in game two.
Yeah, he was awful. So
12 assists, though.
Yeah, he had 12 assists. And then the other thing that hurt them is Durant. I don't know if he ever reached double-digit turnovers, but he was pretty close. He had 8 or 9 turnovers in that game. That's not going to get it done for you either.
Yeah, he had 8 turnovers.
So, no, this is, like you said, this is setting up. I mean, Cleveland's going to get a week off, and then we're gonna have a fun finals. I'm looking forward to it, and it's been fun so far. Devin, what are your thoughts? You're over there shaking your head a little bit at me. No?
No, no. It's going to be a good series no matter who gets in. It'll be fun to see a rematch of either the Cavs and the Warriors from last year, or the rematch of LeBron versus KD and Russ, which happened a few years back when he was in Miami. So
good point.
Either way, I think it's going to be fun, and either way, I'm cheering for Cleveland.
Last note on Cleveland's run. I don't know if you guys, I heard yesterday Hans Olsen on Scotty and Hans was talking about this. They are one of four occasions where a team has gone 10-0 in the playoffs in their first 10 games. And he asked Scotty to name those other times. Hans pointed out two of those times were the Lakers. One of those times was the Spurs. The Lakers, the one time they did it, went undefeated, went on to lose to the Pistons in the finals. And then the last time it happened was the Spurs in 2012. They went undefeated up until they got to the finals. And who did they lose to? The Miami Heat. So Cleveland's on a tear, but watch out. Maybe if it holds par, maybe they lose in the final. I don't know. I'm just saying they're one of only three different teams that have done it.
Well, we shall see.
Yes. Let's jump into Jazz notes.
Let's not.
Or no, not. I not sorry. Sorry, not awards. Jazz notes. We have. Sorry, I'm not looking at the notes. Sorry. Let's jump into more NBA notes. Sorry. Player awards.
Karl Anthony Towns, unanimous rookie of the year. No surprises.
No.
One thing I thought that was cool was the votes for the first and second all rookie team. I didn't expect the Jazz man to be there, but Trey Lyles came in 14th overall. And only 3 of the players above him were drafted after him. Jokic was a second round pick from 2 years ago. Josh Richardson was a second round pick this year. And then Devin Booker was the pick right after him. But all the other ones were drafted ahead of him. It just shows that this was a very solid rookie class.
Now, I thought that first all rookie team was kind of odd. Because did they or did they not have essentially 4 centers and a shooting guard?
Yeah, they did not do it by positions. It was Jokic, Okafor, Towns, Booker, and
Porzingis.
Winslow? Oh, Porzingis. Yeah. Yeah, they did not do it by positions.
Wow, I didn't. When we had our awards predictions, I didn't pick a couple of those guys on that first team. But okay. Well, and to be honest, doesn't surprise me. You said it did. It doesn't surprise me that Lyles ended up where he was. I expected him to get a vote. In fact, I want to go back and look at our predictions, but I thought I said that he would be somewhere in there in the second team.
See, to me, it's just interesting how dominant this class was for big men. Because when you came into the start of the season, you were looking at Moutier, you were looking at, I'm blanking, what's the kid in L.A. that can't turn his cell phone off?
Russell.
you know, I just expected maybe we'd have a point guard in there somewhere, but maybe that's what this class is. This is going to be the one that brings in that next era of big men in this league.
Yeah, that's what's funny when I listen to them talking about this, and you hear a lot of talk about how the league's getting smaller and how this is a guard-dominant league. And maybe it is right now because of who the top players in the league are, but there are a lot of good young big men coming in. And so maybe in 5 years, the conversation is going to be, this is a big man's league. It could just be a pendulum swing.
Yeah. I mean, you look at other people from different classes. You look at Noel, you look at Gobert. Potentially we could be looking at Embiid if he can ever get healthy. It'll be interesting to see where the league is at 5, 6, 7 years down the road.
And whatever Ben Simmons can do.
Right.
Yeah. There's just, I mean, the league is constantly evolving and we're constantly seeing things. The thing is the evolution of the big man. I mean, we're going to get more big men. You know, you're right. It's probably going to end up that way. But I wonder, Karl Anthony Towns is kind of going back to the old school way of post and getting down in the paint. He doesn't take a lot of outside shots, does he? I don't think he does.
He can shoot the three.
Does he shoot the three?
He does.
I don't think he takes very many.
Everywhere.
He doesn't take very many threes, though, if I remember correctly.
He's got the range.
He doesn't have to, but he can.
Right.
He's really like Dirk on offense.
Okay. Well, and then
He's like Dirk with this really, really good low post move.
And the same thing can be said of Cousins, because Cousins, he'll step out behind the three. So you're getting a lot. We evolved from the big man who banged in the paint back in the 90s and the 80s to the big man who avoided the paint and really just shot a lot of outside jumpers like Dirk Nowitzki. You know, I would bring up, but Garnett was just different from everybody else. But you had a lot of guys stepping out and just stretching the floor, Memo and guys like that. Now you're getting into it where you're starting to see a morph between the two, where you're getting big men who can do both. Who will choose to do both. And now the game is going to change even more. What are you going to do? You know, you're going to guard this big man, but he's going to take you off the dribble and he's going to bang with you underneath, or he's going to stretch you out and shoot the three. It's getting very, very good.
Yeah.
So,
let's move into some coaching changes.
Yes.
Jeff Hornacek is with the Knicks.
Yep.
I was hoping he would get a second chance, and I think the Knicks' job is about as good a spot as any to put him. You have Melo, who might be on his way down, probably, but you have Porzingis. You have a renewed excitement in that town now that Porzingis has shown that he really is going to be a future star. Hornacek's coming in to be that coach, a good coach that Knicks haven't seen for a couple years. So I'm happy for him there, and, you know, wish him well. I think the NBA is really hungry for the Knicks to be good. No matter what they've tried to do, the Knicks just have not been, but, you know, maybe he's the guy that can actually turn things around. He has a track record of overachieving, so good for him.
Well, it depends, John. It depends on what Jackson lets him do. If the front office is too involved in the coaching, I just don't see this working out well for him.
I'm sure he won't let him push to get any, you know, available clearance in the situation, push off or anything.
Well, I mean, Jackson was heavily involved. I mean, Derek Fisher's first year, he was basically Phil Jackson's ventriloquist dummy, and it was didn't work at all. It was just did right. not work. And so the second year, I can't remember who did the write-up on this. I think it was Frank Isola, where the second year Fisher had a little bit more freedom, but there were just way too many personality problems with him and off-court issues that Phil ultimately had to pull the trigger on him. So then Phil brings in his guy, Rambis, who, you know, finishes the year with the worst winning percentage than Fisher had. And I think at this point, Phil recognizes, actually, I have no idea. I would hope Phil recognizes that his micromanaging a coach without coaching himself didn't work, and that he lets Hornacek do what he does instead of trying to micromanage again.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for for Jeff, especially because, you know, I was really excited for Jaren Grant coming into the league, thought he'd be something, and he just seemed to be put on the bench. They have pieces. It'd be cool to see New York become a decent team again. They don't have to be great, spectacular, but decent would probably be good for the league, I would think.
Yeah, it would be. And you both completely, well, John, I don't know if you've even heard it, you both brushed over my joke there, but whatever. Who was it on Twitter that said it the other day, too, how the interview process went?
I made that joke on Twitter, so.
Yes, you did. I loved it. I loved it. Hey, sorry, you know, we'd like to interview you. Yeah, you pushed off. Well, besides that, no. You want the job or not? So it's a marriage. Well, what's kind of interesting and intriguing to me, it's a marriage that is, you know, we're going to see where this goes. You've got a little bit of slownism with Hornacek, and I still think some slownisms come up with him. And you combine those with Phil Jackson, and it'll be interesting to see what takes place in New York. But like you said, Devin, and like you said, John, the league does need New York to get good again. Not great. We don't want them to get great, but we do need them to get good. I'll even say this. The East needs them to get good and possibly great. With the East being in a down year like it's been, having New York on that level again would be nice.
You know what's funny is the East looked like this was the first year in 15 years that the East was better.
Yeah.
But by the time we got to the very end of the regular season, that still wasn't the case. It still wound up being the West was stronger. The West had a better winning percentage against the East. But the East was really looking good there for a while. But
I still,
then at the end, the West pulled ahead.
I still think there's going to be a shift in balance of power. We're seeing it. I think I feel it. I think it's coming. And maybe not a massive shift, maybe an evening out. But I think the East is getting there, and they will get there. You know, and that goes to the next coach. Vogel got a job, got the job in Orlando.
Yeah, shocker when Skiles quit, but good for Orlando for jumping on the Vogel train. I mean, I just don't see a reason. There's no good reason why Indiana let Vogel go. I heard Larry Bird's explanation, but I don't agree with it. And so good for Orlando for being the one to take the opportunity to get Vogel. And so now Vogel has this young roster with a ton of potential, and you would think job security to take whatever time he needs to work on that roster and get them back in the playoffs. And so they're going to have another lottery pick this summer that they got to worry about. And then he's got to take all these young assets and figure out, are we going to develop everyone we have? Are we going to try to move some pieces to get some good players now? You know, Orlando is just this wide open book of possibilities, and be interesting to see which direction he goes.
Yeah, definitely a good move, I think. You can call it the Vogel train. I like to call it the Vogelswagen.
that is better.
Oh.
You are correct, sir.
Wow. All right, then.
I'm done. Let's let's call it a day on the podcast. It's all downhill from there.
Exit stage left.
We still have two teams still don't have a coach.
Yeah, so we got to jump.
It looks like they're getting closer to hiring Mike D'Antoni. Memphis, I haven't heard anything of Memphis. I don't know what they're doing.
I thought I heard another name thrown into Houston too. It wasn't just D'Antoni. What was the other name I heard recently mentioned? Or what? No, I could have sworn I see another name.
It looked like
around.
They were trying to get Jeff Van Gundy back, but right. That seems to have cooled off.
Yeah, and you're right about Memphis. What happened? What happened there? Because, I mean, they let a good coach go, which was another surprise. It wasn't just Vogel. It was a surprise that Memphis, you know, let a coach go. But
oh,
now,
Steven Silas.
What's that?
Sorry. Steven Silas was the other one.
Okay, that's what it was. But it's
unfortunate. That's Paul's son.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. But it's unfortunate that it happened to Memphis the way it did and everything. And now they're the last team scraping for something while all the gold pieces have gone elsewhere.
I'll do it.
Yeah, I'll do it.
I'll coach.
Well, I know we have a listener of the show who would probably gladly go take over their front office and coaching, and that's Brett. But, you know, Brett, you know, there's a job out there for you. You might have to move to Memphis, but there you go.
No, I volunteered. So me and Justin Timberlake are going to turn this thing around in Memphis.
Wait, you just brought Timberlake in this. Wow.
Yeah, he's an owner.
Okay, but he's not going to coach. No.
He's going to help.
No.
He's going to be right there, side by side. We got this.
Looks like Memphis is closing in on getting James Borrego, who's an assistant coach with the Spurs.
I got some competition. We'll figure it out.
Okay, that's the name I saw. That was the other name I saw mentioned yesterday, was the guy from the Spurs. That's right. So, yeah, interesting.
Go to Jazz?
Yeah, let's go to Jazz. In fact, since we're talking about moves, Justin Zanuck.
He interviewed for assistant general manager position with Milwaukee Bucks. Got to figure there's something more to that opportunity, since it would be, it would appear to be a lateral move. But since that was a few days ago and I haven't heard anything, I wonder if he's just going to go ahead and stay with the Jazz. But interesting that he interviewed. It makes me wonder what Milwaukee's talking to him about.
Well, maybe the fear of working with Jason Kidd scared him away. I don't know. I'm not sure. That situation with Jason Kidd, I'll be curious to see what happens there, because I don't know how much longer he's... I mean, he's done okay, but I wouldn't call him a long-term fit there.
I mean, Milwaukee gave up some stuff to get him, and he turned Milwaukee around from being the worst team in the league to something. they're better than they were, but...
I'm glad you said something. I was waiting to pounce on whatever you said. Something is a sufficient. That works. So
I don't even. Yeah, I know they had a lot of injuries, but they just. Yeah. You know, they were one of the usual Eastern basement teams.
Yep.
33-49 was their final record.
Yeah.
So they need more.
Yes, they do. And I, like I said, I don't think Jason Kidd's the long-term answer for that. And they did give a lot up to get him, but that one might end up coming back to bite him too. Anyway, Jazz draft position is set. They got the 12th pick.
Got the 12th pick again. The pick that has yielded us Alec Burks and Trey Lyles. It's the Jazz's once again. I would say I'm 50-50 that they keep the pick.
I'm more than 50-50. I don't think they keep it. I'm more inclined to believe they move it.
Yeah, I think so too. There are some interesting player names who are going to be around that position, and I'll get into that more next week as I'm trying to research these guys. But you know, last year was a solid draft. This year is seen as a fairly weak draft, where there are a lot of guys with potential, but very few players that they believe can make an impact right away. This is really the draft of Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram, and then who knows after that who's going to turn out to be anything. So, yep.
Remains to be seen.
I think they'll move it.
No, I agree, and I think that's going to be probably aside from. I mean, they'll move it because I believe they're going to go after some sort of a free agent in the offseason. I think that's going to be their focus, and they've already said that. They've already talked about their focus being getting some veteran bench help and some help on, you know, in the depth department. So I really don't think that going younger in the draft, no matter what pick it is, is going to be the answer to increase that depth that you want to do. It's just not going to work. So I find it hard to believe they keep the pick and that they focus much on the draft, to be honest.
They have 3 second-round picks. I don't see how they use all those either.
Agreed.
I think they'll probably trade one for a future second, one for cash, and you know, maybe they get one player and then they get another one who's a Euro stash. I just don't see them.
No, I agree.
I can't see them using all three.
I do. They're gonna trade Hayward. They're going to.
Oh, that's true.
They're going to trade Favors. And we're going to find a bunch of Paul Millsaps in the second round.
Sounds like a plan.
We need to do this.
Maybe that's why
Zanuck
was interviewing with the Bucks.
Wow. Maybe Zanuck was interviewing with the Bucks as kind of an ulterior motive. He'll go up there with the Bucks, and then Dennis Lindsay and Zanuck will make some moves together, and we'll get us better and get them better, and it'll all be good.
I wish people listening could see Alan's face when I say these things.
Yeah.
That's I say them just for the reaction, and I wish everyone could enjoy it as much as I do. Let's move on.
Let's move on. Let's continue our series that we took a week off of. We're jumping into free agent big man.
Yes. Final look at free agency. The big men that are going to be available. I didn't look them all, but I'm going to list off most. And I'll go alphabetical by team. Al Horford, free agent from Atlanta. A lot of teams are going to be pursuing him. I don't see how he would fit on the Jazz unless the Jazz make some major moves, but it's interesting that he'll be out there piquing the interest of other teams. I think Portland should go after him aggressively. Boston has Amir Johnson. He's always been an interesting rotational guy. Sometimes he starts in the league. I think he would be an upgrade over Trevor Booker. There probably will be plenty of teams looking for his services as well. Al Jefferson.
Sorry, who was that again? Say that name
Amir
again.
Amir Johnson.
Amir Johnson, okay.
Charlotte has Al Jefferson and Tyler Hansbrough. Hansbrough, they probably let go. He's one of those guys who can... He's your ninth or tenth man. Al Jefferson, he's been coming off the bench most of this year. He seems to be on the downward trajectory for his career, but he's a guy that plenty of teams could bring in for his inside scoring off the bench. Maybe that's a piece. He was a good citizen, and maybe it'd be interesting if Al came back to the Jazz as a bench guy. That'd be really weird.
And I know a lot of fans did not like his game in a lot of ways, especially his defense. And a lot of people claimed he was a black hole on offense. But when all is said and done, he was endeared by most fans. People did like him.
Yeah, I liked him. I mean, I was glad to see him go because I thought, you know, Favors was the power forward of the future. And I really wanted to see what Cantor could do. And I mean, Jefferson came in and his style was very different than what we were used to with the Jazz because you'd pass the ball to Jefferson and everything would stop. And then he'd just try to break down the guy guarding him and score. And the Jazz had been playing a very ball movement heavy offense. And then when Al got here, it was like you pass it to Al and everything would stop. And that, you know, it's not very fun to watch that a lot of the time, I thought. And so while he was a reliable scorer, I just didn't think it was as fun to watch with him. And so it was good for the Jazz and Al to part ways when they did. And now he's at a different point in his career where he would have a different role.
So what you're saying, based on our wing talk a couple of weeks back in this one, let's just bring back Marvin Williams and Al Jefferson, a Jazz reunion, and those are our bench players.
Woohoo!
Yay!
Good work.
Who's next on the list?
Joakim Noah, free agent in Chicago. They seem to be done with him. His skills have greatly diminished the past year or two. So he would be someone where you could take a chance on him, see if he gets rejuvenated. If he could be close to what he was 2 years ago, he would be an amazing bench player. Very good passer, very good defender. But, you know, what Noah are you going to get if you sign him?
What's more is he's not a good shooter. So while you get his energy and you get his passing and you get his abilities there, it's almost like, I'm going to be honest here, it's no worse, no better necessarily than Trevor Booker if you think about it. I mean, defensively, yes. But Trevor Booker is not a reliable shooter either. And you bring in Noah and you really don't get much of a reliable shooter out of that.
Joakim Noah?
Yeah.
You guys know where he ends up. He's going to Cleveland.
Oh.
True.
Oh, you think Cleveland?
Why not?
I remember watching the All-Star game a few years back, and I saw Kyrie, LeBron, and Noah on the court together. This was when LeBron was in Miami, of course. And it was just like, man, those three would be something special. I think that's not a bad fit.
Yeah, that's not a bad fit. I could go with that. I could get on board with that. That's not a bad fit.
And that's scary.
Yeah.
I could actually see that because Cleveland's probably going to let Mozgov walk.
And why not? Now you've got Thompson who's turned out to be a really good solid big man for them, and you throw in Noah into the mix. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's a good call. That's a good call.
But we'll see. I wouldn't mind him in a Jazz uniform.
Well, but back to the point I made, I wouldn't mind him in a Jazz uniform either. I just don't think he fills the need that the Jazz need at that position because he has problems in the shooting area, and you need a guy, you know, with the movement that Jazz get, you know, and the ability, you know, you need a guy that can pass, and Trey Lyles is turning into that guy, but you need a guy that can shoot as well. And Joakim Noah is not the answer.
Well, but as your backup five, do you really? I mean, if you get Noah as your backup five and he's, you know, healthy and a little bit closer to what he was 2 years ago than last year, he's really there to make sure the defense doesn't deteriorate when Rudy goes off the floor. And, you know, it's not like Rudy can shoot outside of 8 feet. So,
hey, wait a minute.
Noah's about the same thing.
Don't go there. I was at two games this year where I watched him drain an 18 and a 20 footer respectively, and it was nothing but net, and it was pretty.
And you remember those distinctly because they're rare occurrences.
Go ahead and pull the unicorn reference on me. I dare you. Go ahead. all right. So Noah, interesting prospect, but like you guys said, and I have to agree, probably in Cleveland, just like Devin pointed out. So who's next on the list?
Well, Mozgov will probably leave Cleveland. So
yeah,
he's a big man and he's kind of lost his way in Cleveland, but you know, he's still a very good player.
He's an intriguing option for me.
Next is Dallas. Here is the guy I wanted the Jazz to get a couple years ago, Zaza Pachulia. That is a veteran anchor for you. He probably doesn't have much left, but he would be a very good bench anchor and locker room guy. Let me go a little bit faster through some of these. Detroit has Tolliver. Yeah. Golden State has Spates and Varejao. I would pass on both. Houston has Dwight Howard. Eh. They also have Monta Ellis, who will be a restricted free agent. He's had some health issues, but I think he would be an intriguing prospect. Let's see. Pacers have Jordan Hill and Mihinmi. I probably would not want either of those. Lakers have Roy Hibbert. I think Roy Hibbert is just about done. Memphis, Birdman. Bring Birdman in for a year as an enforcer, just for the psycho fun of it.
I don't mind that. I really don't.
The minute you're saying that, Devin's getting the grin on his face, and I'm just trying to think of what my response is, and I got nothing.
He's one of those guys. You hate him when he's on another team. But I remember when I was cheering for Miami, because I admitted I am a LeBron fan, and I have cheered for him in Cleveland, then in Miami, now back in Cleveland. But Birdman was really fun when he was on the side you wanted to win.
Yeah, I can see that. Who knows?
Yeah.
Let's see. Miami, Hassan Whiteside, he's going to be trying to get max money. And then Amari Stoudemire, still bouncing around the league. Probably not. Pelicans, Ryan Anderson, always an interesting name that comes up. Really good outside shooter, has had health issues. he seems like he would be a really good fit on the Jazz. But if you bring in Ryan Anderson, what does that do with Trey Lyles? You're kind of bringing in not only the same position, but the same skill set.
So, and Lyles has a higher ceiling.
Yeah. But he's out there. Philadelphia, they're going to draft Ben Simmons, and they're going to have a ton of big men. So I just wonder if you look at Philadelphia's roster and try to work out a trade for one of those guys. I mean, they have their four best players are going to be all of the 4-5 position. You're going to have Okafor, Noel, Embiid, Dario Saric is coming over, and then you have Ben Simmons. I mean, that is that's a front heavy roster.
Who do you go after, John? Who's your one? Who's your two option?
And before he answers that, one of those guys might still be considered damaged goods, and I don't know how he's going to turn out in the NBA yet.
Yeah, Embiid has yet to play an NBA game. So you could make some kind of offer where you're like, how much more do you want to invest in this guy that doesn't look like he's going to turn into anything? Or do you want to start using him as an asset to strengthen your team? But also of those guys, I think Noel would be the one that you could get for cheapest. And I still think that he has a lot of potential in this league. I just think if you could get him on a better team and he could see what it's like to actually win, that he could really blossom as a player.
See, Embiid's the one that I'd turn the other way and I'd run.
Oh, not me.
I'd run very far away. Because he reminds me already of a guy that Portland put money into and pick up.
You're going to make the Odin reference.
I am, because it reminds me of that. And look at where it got them and look at where it went there. I'm afraid on that one, simply because Embiid is damaged goods. And every time you think it might work out, he ends up sitting out another season because of something else. He hasn't played a single game yet. I'm not sure I'm willing to invest that time and effort into him yet.
Oh, I am.
Why?
How much could they want for him?
Nothing, probably. So you're saying pick him up for nothing.
Why not take a chance on this guy?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm
there'll be people who make offers. I think if you offer the 12th pick and one or two other things, they'd have to seriously consider that.
We've got a plethora. Alan, a plethora of second round picks. And we could get rid of the rights that we had to that guy overseas that John is.
Although really, upset about. Yeah, let's give him Tomich.
Can we do that?
Got to remember, Philadelphia has a million second round picks. So
yeah,
I don't think they need more.
Maybe they want more so they can turn them into like two first round picks.
Okay. So let's,
second round picks.
Are there any other names you were going to bring up?
Locke keeps bringing up John Lohr from Phoenix. Looking at him, I can see that he is like, I see him as kind of a Jeff Withey player if he's an inch or two shorter, but he can hit the three. So sure, why not? Portland has Chris Kaman, who is still in the league for some reason. They also have Myers Leonard, who's going to be a restricted free agent, but with the moves Portland looks like they're going to be trying to make, maybe that's one they accidentally let go. Let's see. The Spurs have David West. He had a player option. He took a lot less money to try to chase a ring. Didn't work out. Makes me wonder what he's going to be looking for this offseason. And then they also had Marjanovic is a restricted free agent, but I think the Spurs will do what they can to keep him. Toronto, Bismack Biyombo is a free agent. It'll be interesting to see what people try to get out of him. He's finally turned into a competent NBA player.
Yes, he has.
I think he's found himself in Toronto and he'll probably want to stay there. And then here's one that makes me scratch my chin. Nene is going to be a free agent. He's had health issues. He hasn't played 70 games in 3 years.
I like his game. I like his game a lot.
I like his game. I think if you can keep him healthy, he would still be a solid contributor in many ways. I think he would be a really good veteran signee.
I would agree with that. So, no, yeah. I'm curious, and we don't have to spend too much more time on this, but I'm curious as to why you don't like or not intrigued by Mo Spates.
Ball hog. I mean, Mo Spates is on the Warriors, and yet he has like a 30% usage rate.
Okay.
Anytime he gets on the floor, he just has to shoot.
Okay. Which obviously works for what Kerr wants him to do, because that's what Kerr puts him on the floor to do. So,
yeah, he'll put him out for 10 minutes a game, and then he'll shoot like 4 of 8. And
right
there, you go.
All right, that makes sense. I just we brushed over that pretty quickly, but I wanted your thoughts on it. So that makes sense.
They're the deeper Warriors players. I'm suspect of. It's a really good system, and it works for everybody. But that doesn't mean if you put Mo Spates and Ian Clark and Brandon Rush on other teams that they're going to be able to be as effective.
Right. No, I'm with you. Any other names you wanted to go over, or is that to pretty much cover the list?
That's my list.
All right. Yeah, a few players I'm very intrigued by on that. But Montagunas is an intriguing player for me as well. And I know you mentioned him, and we brushed over him pretty quickly, but he's another interesting name for me as well. So, no, that's a good list.
His draft pick is one of the ones that the Jazz traded away when they brought over Al Jefferson.
Okay.
So he's always been one I kind of kept my eye on.
Right.
What could have been.
Yeah. No, and I'll be interested to see what they do. I wonder if they're... I wonder where their focus is going to be, if it's going to be more for a wing free agent than it will be a big man. But I'm very curious to see what happens.
Me too.
So, all right. So that was part three of our free agent series, folks. If you don't remember the last couple of discussions, go back to a couple of our previous episodes where we talked about them. So, and you can get some ideas from what the Jazz would be looking at this offseason, the plethora of names to go through. Yes, I'm using that word again, plethora. Thanks, Devin.
Yep.
Let's jump into, does that cover everything we wanted to talk sports-wise? Because I think we wanted to get into some movie talk.
There's only one more thing we could talk about.
What's that?
Jazz Summer League.
Yes.
Tickets available. First 2 days will be at Vivint Smart Home Arena. I still hate that name. And the last day will be up at the Huntsman Center.
Yes, it will.
My only problem with that is they're playing on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I saw that
too. That's kind of a downer. But it comes because they are playing in Las Vegas Summer League immediately following Utah Jazz Summer League. So scheduling had to be done, I guess.
But it is very nice to see the Summer League back again. And I'm hoping this will be a consistent thing going forward. So this is second year running. I'm liking it.
You guys get your seats?
I have not got mine yet. You did. John, you did?
No, I did not.
Okay. I saw that Devin did.
I did. I picked up 4 seats on row 10 at Vivint.
And I know of at least one of our listeners who will be looking for an opportunity to meet up with us during Summer League if we get a chance. So
I think all of our listeners want to meet up with us because we are awesome.
Well, I want to meet some of them. So yeah, I'm hoping to get a couple tickets and go. So yes.
I want to meet all of them, Alan, because I think all of our listeners are great.
I didn't say that.
And on that note, John, let's talk about movies.
Don't. You just upstaged me. That was you jerk. Yes, let's talk movies.
We have not had a chance
to talk about Captain America.
I mean, we both saw this 2 weeks ago, but we haven't had a chance to talk about Captain America.
Confession time. I did not see it 2 weeks ago, and thankfully I did see it on this last Sunday. So yeah, now we can talk about it for sure.
Okay, I actually saw it twice. wife and I saw it, and then I took kids to it. So
your initial thoughts?
One of the better Marvel movies, and I like Marvel movies, so I thought it was really good. I think the fight scene at the airport with all 12 Avengers, I think that's just one of the best choreographed fight scenes ever.
Oh my gosh, that was fantastic. Yes.
That is how you do a big battle fight scene. I mean, we've seen a lot of these. You know, we have a lot of X-Men movies, a lot of superhero movies over the years. That is the best one I have seen.
Oh, and the dialogue during that battle? Oh my gosh, it was fantastic. The addition of Spider-Man was great, though. That's what I loved about that entire scene, was having him in there. That was great.
They did a really good job of giving a moment to all the characters who are already established.
Yes.
And I was also very impressed on the way they brought in Spider-Man, the casting of Spider-Man, everything about that, the way they brought on Black Panther. I mean, this is a movie where they introduce two new Avengers out of nowhere. They feel like they have full arcs to their character, and you're excited to see the standalone movies of both of them.
Right. No, the other thing I like too is that particular fight scene was almost a microcosm of this event, but they brought in other Avengers that we've seen in other movies, and I expected it before even going into it. I'm like, this is going to be awkward. And guess what? In that battle, it was awkward. Spider-Man was involved and doing what he was told, but you could tell it was like, what are you doing here? I don't know. I was just told to be here. And the same thing of Ant-Man. It's like, I was just told to beat up the other guys and to stop them. So that's why I'm here. And it was so awkward, but it was so perfect. And it fit. I loved the way they handled bringing in those characters.
I thought they handled everyone's motivations just right. You understood why everyone was on what side they were on and
yes.
the decisions they made. Personally, I'm 100% on Captain America's side as far as motivations go. But yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought, you know, if I ranked all Marvel movies, this is probably still in my top three.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was very impressed. It deserves all the accolades it's getting.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it. There are a couple of drawbacks I had, and I'm with you. I would rank it in the top for me, near the top. But see, I'm Guardians of the Galaxy is my favorite yet to this point. That one is my top Marvel movie right now. But this one is right near the top. I enjoyed it a lot. Couple of drawbacks for me though. One, I expected this to be very much a Captain America movie. And at times, John, I don't know if you felt this way, but at times I felt like it was an Avengers movie more than it was a Captain America movie. And
well,
I don't know if I liked that. I prefer, because I like the Captain America storyline, so I thought it was here, but I thought sometimes the Captain America storyline got overshadowed by the Avengers. And I don't like that.
In a way, but I mean, really, if someone had not seen any of the Marvel movies and they were about to go see this, I would say Captain America: The Winter Soldier is the most crucial one you have to watch before you watch this movie.
Absolutely.
Understand what's going on. Really that, and then second is probably Age of Ultron, but
absolutely.
It was like an Avengers movie with a really Captain America heavy emphasis.
Okay, that's a different way to look at it. Yeah.
I was fine with that.
No,
Avengers was trying to be fair to everybody, even though, you know, everyone knows Iron Man is our star, but they try to give everyone something.
Right.
And this one, they gave everyone something, but this was very clearly Captain America's story.
Right. No, and yeah, that was the one thing I felt like it was clouded at times. But I no, you're right. And if you look at it from that angle, it's a little better. The only other drawback I have is, dude, Aunt May is hot. There's something wrong with that.
Yeah. But
that's not the way I picture Aunt May. I don't expect and picture this hot middle-aged woman. I'm expecting this old lady. Don't look at me like that, Devin, because I'm telling you. She's
50, 51 years old.
I know. I'm just saying. And
I think she's 51.
And Tony Stark's practically hitting on her. There is something wrong here.
They are the same age, you know.
I know.
You ever see Only You?
Oh, I may have. It's been a while.
Marissa Tomei and Robert Downey Jr., romantic comedy from 1994.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. All right, I get you.
I don't remember the plot, but I remember the movie happened.
No, and that's the only thing. Weird look at all, Devin, is serious. If you were to watch this, it's just one of those things that comics, cartoons, everything I've ever known of Spider-Man, I've always pictured a silver-haired older lady. So it was really odd for me to deal with this very good-looking middle-aged woman as Aunt May. It just was just – it took me back took me out of the experience a little bit.
It's a different way to go.
Yeah.
Please stop talking about my Aunt May like that. It's making me uncomfortable.
All right, fine, whatever. Anyway, otherwise, I thought it was a great movie. Yes, I enjoyed it. And it's one of those, unlike Batman versus Superman, it's one I'd go back and see over and over again because I believe it would. And you saw it a second time. It held up a second time, right?
Yep.
So Batman versus Superman is one that I had no desire to go back and see again. This one I do. I would see this one over again.
I want to see Batman versus Superman a second time for the study of it, see if it really was. I don't know. I was happy to see Civil War a second time because I enjoyed it so much. Batman versus Superman, I want to go back and see if the problems I had with it were legitimate or if it was just to see if it's any better the second time around. Because there was so much stuff in there that I want to see if if there are things I missed or if it was really just bad storytelling.
Fair
enough. I know a lot of it was bad storytelling, but I still want to see it a second time.
Fair enough. All right. You had two other movies that you've seen you wanted to talk about briefly. Nice Guys?
I did. I saw The Nice Guys last night. I really enjoyed it. It's from writer-director Shane Black. He wrote the first Lethal Weapon movie. He directed a movie about 20 years ago called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang with Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer that was really good. So it's another, you know, buddy action comedy. You don't really think of Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling as funny guys, but they were really effective here. Russell Crowe put on 30 pounds just so he would have a more physical differentiation between him and Gosling, because it's just funnier when one guy's fat and one guy's skinny. And he's kind of the straight man to Ryan Gosling. And Ryan Gosling,
no, Devin, he's not talking about you and me here.
I think he
no,
is.
No, he's not.
I think
no,
he is.
No, no, he's not. No, I am not
I swear
the. Okay,
I was.
All right, maybe there is a fat guy, skinny guy going on here, but whatever.
It's kind of funny now that you're making me think about it. But no, I mean, right. There is a lot of physical comedy in here that Ryan Gosling does that is just throwback. There are parts where he reminded me of Stan Laurel or Charlie Chaplin. There's one scene where he is directly doing a Lou Costello bit that I just thought was really funny. It's really funny to watch Ryan Gosling like this. I've never quite seen him like this before. So I enjoyed it. I hope it does well. It isn't tracking very well. So it probably won't do that well at the box office, but it's at 90% at Rotten Tomatoes. So it deserves to find an audience. I hope it does. But we'll see.
And the other movie?
I really enjoyed it. I also saw Money Monster.
Okay.
And I liked it. It's kind of a... It's like an old-fashioned drama. It's the kind of movie that making in the 80s. It's a commentary on the financial crisis, although that's really not its strength. Its strength is in the actors,
right,
interacting with each other. The ultimate plot itself is kind of simplistic. You know, evil CEO loses $800 million. What really happened? So it's pretty formulaic in that way. George Clooney's playing this Jim Cramer type host of a financial cable show. And Jack O'Connell from Unbroken takes him hostage, trying to find out what happened to all the money. And it's got shades of Dog Day Afternoon. You know, it was fine. I liked it. Glad I saw it. Probably one people would be okay to wait for Netflix to watch it, but you know, it's good.
All right, there you go, Money Monster and The Nice Guys, and then of course Captain America. So. Devin, anything to throw in there extra other than the fat and skinny guy part?
I thought I had missed my best part of the show, but that was it. Not with movies. I haven't seen any movies recently, but it is the season ending of a lot of TV shows.
Yes.
So you are seeing great stuff. I watched The Blacklist.
As did I.
And I believe, John, you have kind of fallen behind on what's going on, so we will not play spoiler. But it has me excited again.
as does and me as well. It also both the final two episodes set up what is to come, a new series starting in the fall too, an offshoot series from The Blacklist starring oh my gosh, Famke Janssen and the other guy on the show, I forget his
Tom
name.
Tom Keen.
Yeah, the guy that played Tom Keen. So an interesting offshoot series that would be starting in the fall too. I'm looking forward to that one as well. But yeah,
it was predictable. It was kind of predictable.
It was.
But it set it up so that there was somewhere to go with the story, and that's why I enjoyed it so much.
Yep.
I also watched this 2-hour season finale of Grimm, which I thought was very good. I'm not sure either of you watched that, but
I haven't seen much of Grimm, so
I really enjoyed it. It's I enjoy the special effects, I enjoy the story. It's just something different from almost anything else that you see on network television. And then for anyone who's following the Chicago shows, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, and Chicago Med, those season finales, I believe one of them was last week,
yes,
and the others are coming this week. But there is a new show that will be coming this fall, I believe, called Chicago Justice.
Wow, they're going. Mm. And for those who don't know, those series, Chicago Med, Chicago Fire, Chicago Justice, they were all written and based off of writings from the guy who started the Law and Order series back in the day. Same guy that did them.
Right, Dick Wolf.
Oh, are they, yeah, Dick Wolf shows?
Yep, they are all Dick Wolf shows, all of them.
And they are great. And actually, I had said, I'm not sure if I said this on the show or not, several months ago, I said, the thing that they need is a Chicago Law.
Well, now you got it.
And now I got it.
Yep.
Because now what you can do is you can see these stories kind of spiral throughout a week, in that you can see the...
What I like about them, too, is they all three to this point and now four will have crossover episodes where you'll have a particular Tuesday or Wednesday where you'll have two-parters and three-parters that will involve all three.
You can see what happens in the fire incident. You can see the medical treatment of that, the police investigation, and now you can see the trial. And I think that just is a fun way to do television.
Yeah, I don't know, John, you probably haven't gotten into any of them, but I would recommend them. They've become a staple in my home, and my wife and I have watched all of them for the last four or five seasons that most of them have been ongoing. So,
and they are on Netflix, I believe.
I have not looked. That's a possibility, yes.
That it sounds kind of like what they're doing with the Marvel shows on Netflix is all of them can interchange with each other, and you can have characters show up on more than one show. And
as a matter of fact, just so you know, I saw this in the news yesterday. They're going to be doing this with the DC Netflix series too, or not the CW ones, the DC CWs. I've just read yesterday, yeah, that they're going to have a crossover between the three or four different shows very soon.
I saw Supergirl and Flash are having crossover, and I'm sure they'll bring Arrow into it.
You saw
it
Supergirl Flash?
Supergirl and Flash are going
to... Oh, there was an and in there.
Yes. You know what? I think on that note, we're going to have to end because, Devin, you are just, you know, wouldn't you know it? We kind of got to go.
It's getting late. It is getting late. Let's wrap it up.
All right, folks. Thank you for joining us for another episode edition of Jedi and Germs. We've enjoyed having you. Thanks for listening. If you would please leave us a review on iTunes, we would appreciate that very much. You can find us on Stitcher, Facebook, and Twitter, all under the same name, Jedi and Germs. Find each one of us on Twitter, Torn by Devin, Jedi Zog, and Germs Guy. Look us up, hit us up, have a discussion of what you heard on the show, what you did or did not agree with, maybe some additional thoughts you wanted to shoot in. We love interacting with you, and we'll look for you again next time on the Jedi and Germs. And John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.